Chapter 2 Lily's Jeep screeches into the driveway. Wearing all black as usual, my best friend hops out so I can climb into the back seat. Granny June sits in the passenger seat, headscarf tied under her chin, dark brown eyes barely peeking over the dashboard. Between tiny Lily and her great-grandmother, it's a wonder either can see the road. Lily's been my best friend since sixth grade, when she came to live with Granny June. We look like opposites, and not just because of our height difference. I'm so pale, the other Nish kids call me Ghost, and I once overheard someone referred to me as that washed-out sister of Levi's. When Lily lived with her Zaganash dad and his wife, they kept her out of the sun so her reddish-brown skin wouldn't get any darker. We both learned early on that there is an acceptable Anishinaabe skin tone continuum, and those who land on its outer edges have to put up with different versions of the same bullshit. Lily's smile is outlined in glossy black lipstick. It grows wider as she takes in my outfit, jeans paired with one of my dad's hockey jerseys extending to mid-thigh. "Lady Donis in her finest gown, it's my pleasure to drive thee," she bows. I grin, and it feels like when I slip off a backpack loaded with all my school books. "I should sit back there, too much work for you," Granny June says, watching as I flip the driver's seat forward and wedge my nearly 6-foot-tall frame into the back, like seeing a baby crawl back into the womb. She says this every time we both hitch a ride with Lily. "No way, Granny June, you're the best co-pilot. You do not make an elder accommodate you. You just don't." We often drop Granny June at the Sioux Senior Center on our way to work, depending on what's for lunch. She compares the monthly menus for the two senior citizen lunch programs, monitoring them as closely as bingo cards during the coverall. If Granny June thinks the Zaganash are getting a better meal, she makes Lily drop her off at the Sioux Senior Center downtown. Otherwise, a tribal van picks her up for the ferry ride to Nokomis Meshomis Elder Center on Sugar Island for lunch and social activities. "Did you do it?" Lily gives a knowing glance in the rearview mirror. "Yep." "Did you use protection?" Granny June says. We all laugh, and as Lily turns a corner too quickly, even her tires add a squeal. "No, Granny," Lily says. "Donis told her ma and grandma about not going to U of M. It's official. Lake Superior State University, baby!" She does a high-pitched trill out the window, which startles a few tourists on the sidewalk. Lily's tried and failed to teach me how to lili, which some Nish women do to call out an accomplishment. Granny June turns to look at me and scowls. I wait for her to tell me to sit up straight. It's what Grand Mary would say. "My girl, some boats are for the river and some are for the ocean." I think Granny June is right. I just don't know which one I am. Lily gives me a sympathetic look in the rearview mirror. In science, a mixture has two or more components that don't join chemically, like oil and vinegar. Lily knows it's how I feel. Sad about not being in Ann Arbor, yet glad to share freshman year with her. Both feelings existing separately, but swirling around together inside me. We drive past gift shops along one side of the street. The other side follows the river, where a crowd of tourists watches a 1,000-foot-long freighter pass through the Sioux locks. I remember when we went to downtown Ann Arbor and took the campus tour last fall. Grand Mary's enthusiasm contrasted with Mom's annoying questions about crime rates. Uncle David, who rarely sided against my mother, insisted that I needed to earn my degree far from home. But to me, the University of Michigan meant more than just an education. It was freedom from the gossip that has surrounded me my whole life. Donis Fontaine? Wasn't her dad that hockey player, Levi Firekeeper? He was one of the few Indians from Sugar Island with potential. I remember when he knocked up Grace Fontaine, richest, whitest girl in town. Didn't he booze it up at a party on Sugar Island and crash his car with her in it? What a shame when he broke his legs in the crash, just when the scouts were coming around, ended his hockey career. Mary and Lorenzo sent their daughter to stay with relatives in Montreal, but when she came back with a 3-month-old baby girl, Levi was married to someone else and had Levi Jr. I heard Mousy Grace stood up to her parents when they tried keeping that baby girl from Levi and all those Indian relatives. Oh, and then there was that terrible tragedy. We pass a billboard that usually advertises the Superior Shores Casino and Resort, but for the past month, the Sugar Island Ojibwe tribe has encouraged enrolled members to vote in today's tribal council election. Last night, someone graffitied it, changing one letter to make it read, "Vote! It's your tribal erection!" "I'd vote for that," Granny June says. Lily and I crack up again. Then Granny rants about how it doesn't matter who gets elected because they end up serving themselves better than any of the members. "Now, when I die, you's gotta promise to get tribal council to be pallbearers at my funeral," she pauses for dramatic effect, "so they can let me down one last time." I laugh along with Granny June. As usual, my best friend just shakes her head. "Teddy should have run," Lily says. "She would have cleaned up, eh?" My Aunt Teddy is the smartest person we know. She's so badass. Some rabble-rouser tribal members want Sugar Island to declare its independence from the United States. If they ever got Auntie on board with their half-baked plan, Operation Secede would actually happen. "Eh, Auntie says she can make a bigger impact as tribal health director," I say. Granny June chimes in. "She'd never win. Same as me. Teddy tells it like it is. Voters want pretty lies over ugly truths, eh?" Lily nods, even though neither of us is eligible to vote in a tribal election because we're not enrolled. "Listen to me, my girls," Granny June says. "Strong Ojibwe women are like the tide, reminding us of forces too powerful to control. Weak people fear that strength. They won't vote for a Nishkowe they fear." Now I'm the one nodding along to my elders' truth. When we arrive at the Sioux Senior Center, Lily does her unique method of parallel parking, pulling in nose first until she taps the rear bumper of the car ahead. We both climb out to help Granny June. She pauses before entering the center. "Me and Teddy got skeletons in the closet. Slept with too many of their men." Her chin juts defiantly. "Well, that and our felonies." Lily and I give each other wide-eyed looks as Granny June waves us off. Back in the Jeep, we burst into peals of laughter. "Holy shit," Lily says. "I know Granny June's got a past, but you think it's true about Teddy having felonies?" She reverses into the bumper of the car parked behind us and then merges into downtown traffic. Auntie says all those stories about her youthful shenanigans are bull. "Speaking of shenanigans, we set for tomorrow?" Lily asks as we head toward the tribe satellite reservation on the mainland. "Yes, we need to celebrate," I say, focusing on the positive part of my decision. "You were so worked up about telling Grandmary. How'd she react?"
She
let me know it's okay. I'm touched again by that moment between my grandmother and me, when I realized she saw the situation clearly and that she understood. "See, you always worry for no reason," Lily says. We reach Chimakwa Arena. There are two polling locations for today's tribal council election, one here at the community recreation facility and one at the Elder Center on Sugar Island. Cars already line both sides of Ice Circle Drive. Lily bumps over the curb to park on the grass. She catches me scanning the lot for any tribal cop cars. Lily's creative parking skills always attract police attention. "Have you seen TJ yet? Do we really gotta call him Officer Kiwaden?" She shudders. "You didn't invite him to the party, did you?" "No, I did not invite a tribal cop to our party," I say, all peeved. "I'm not the one who gets back with their ex every other week." Lily eyeballs me coolly. Her mouth twitches, but she stays silent. Just as we reach the front row of cars, she slaps my back, hard. "Ow! What the hell?" I turn to see my best friend looking all innocent. "What? You had a black fly on you the size of a hummingbird." This time, she grins. We crack up. Our laughter is as bubbly as I feel, knowing that everything will be okay. A gauntlet of tribal members wave campaign yard signs for their favorite candidates as voters enter Chimakwa to cast their ballots. One lady perks up when we approach and offers us a plate of homemade cookies. "They're not enrolled," her sidekick announces coldly. The cookie lady sets the treats back down and impassively calls out, "Have a nice day." We are descendants, rather than enrolled members, of the Sugar Island Ojibwe tribe. My father isn't listed on my birth certificate, and Lily doesn't meet the minimum blood quantum requirement for enrollment. We still regard the tribe as ours, even though our faces are pressed against the glass looking in from outside. As if we wanted their Moen cookies, Lily mutters, sounding exactly like Granny June. I don't mention how we both licked our lips at that plate. The lobby is packed. Voters line the hallway to the volleyball court turned polling location. Parents drop off their children for the Nibing program. The summer recreational program provides full-time childcare for kids who need supervised activities intended to tire them out, but is way more effective at exhausting us group leaders. Just before we part ways to join our different groups, Lily nudges me. Later, Gator. After a while, Crocodilus Niloticus. We do our special handshake. High five for the tall girl, low five for the shorty, elbow touch, hacky sack foot bump, and palm forward to lock thumbs for the butterfly flutter finale. Love you, geek. Lily always gets the last word.